Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Means that the number one pick in the 2021 NBA draft goes to the Detroit Pistons.
Who's got the number one pick in this year's draft? Who's got the number one pick in this year's draft?
Basketball!
Select Isaiah Stewart.
The Detroit Pistons select Killian Hayes.
Sadiq, that was absolutely sensational.
I don't know what went into that process. I met the criteria to be selected, but I wasn't.
From long range.
Detroit basketball!
What's going on, Pistons fans? Welcome back to another edition of the Palace of Pistons podcast, brought to you by Believe. Aaron Johnson and Jasper Apollonia here with you this week. We've got really fun stuff, I think, to get into. Some of the topics, especially this first one, that I think, you know, big picture, long-term perspective. I love those kind of conversations. I'm excited to get into it with Jasper today. But first off, Jasper, how are we doing?
Oh, I'm doing great, Aaron. I'm so excited for this podcast. You know, you kind of hinted at it, but I'll spoil the surprise. That's right, folks. We are going to be going through all of our old tweets from 2010. We are going to give them to you here live. You're going to really, really hate this podcast, folks. So stay tuned. We're going to have some really awful stuff coming up for you soon. Oh, man, Aaron said some stuff back in when he was five, and I can't wait to not break it down. So yeah, let's go.
Harry Drummond tweets from 2005. Oh,
they're very controversial. They're very controversial.
Well, let's get into our first stop. Actually, before we do that, we should definitely talk about our sponsors, BetOnline. As always, they're back supporting us as they do every week. And BetOnline continues to be the number one source for all your betting needs and sports information. Find all the latest odds, news, and sports developments, including Major League Baseball, the latest fighting news, and even next season's early NFL futures. Hey, we betting Lions over 5.5 wins? I sure as hell won't be, or maybe it's 6.5. Either way, I won't be. With training camp right around the corner, BetOnline has opened up odds for team wins, division futures, and of course, the Super Bowl. Head to the website or use your mobile device to sign today and receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Just use our promo code BLEAVE, BLEAV, to get the bonus and get into the action. BetOnline, where the game starts. I'll tell you what, talking about football, I am so ready to see football on my screen. And I don't know how big of a football guy you are. I feel like we've talked about it before. I love football. The only thing that I don't like is the weather that comes with it. It signifies the change of the season. I am a summer guy. I'll take the heat over the cold every day of the week, twice on Sunday. But man, just seeing some of this stuff come out with football, teams reporting to training camp. Obviously, Kyler Murray signed his extension with Arizona earlier today. Now we're talking about football with the betting odds here on the show. I am so ready for football to come back.
Oh, me too, Aaron. I'm a summer guy too. It's 95 degrees out here in New York City today. I have been spending it all in the sun reading. So for me, I love it too. That's the only thing I don't like about football as well is the weather, especially when you're playing football. You ever get hit in those Michigan winters, buddy? It hurts, especially when you stink at football like I did when I was in high school and middle school. So yeah, that was the only thing I didn't really care for, but I do love it. And I'm definitely ready to get back into betting because I'm going to be real, Aaron. Baseball betting, hockey betting, basketball betting, even to a certain extent, it doesn't do it for me quite like the NFL does. But we do have a little something to talk, not just NFL betting odds and not just NFL over-unders. The Pistons season win total over under came out today, Aaron. It was set at 27 and a half wins. I'm interested to hear what you have to say on this. Do you think this is too high? You think it's just low? Or, well, are we in the Goldilocks zone here? Is it just right?
This is a great way to get into our first topic, because I remember having this same discussion last year when line was 23 and a half. And we were both like, hey, this is an easy over. Pistons over 23 and a half is the lock of the century.
And Mike, too. Let's not let him off. That's true. He also liked the over.
That's true. We all said the over was a very safe play at 23 and a half wins. And what did the Pistons do? Well, they won 23 games. So I don't want to get overzealous. I feel like 27 and a half is a good line. I mean, in my opinion, you know, just looking at the roster, I feel like it should be, you know, 4 or 5 wins better than it was last season. But let's not get it twisted. The Eastern Conference didn't get worse. I think it's gotten better, and heck, it might continue to get better if Donovan Mitchell gets traded to the New York Knicks. I mean, the Pistons, you know, obviously they're going to play these Eastern Conference teams more than they're going to play the Western Conference teams. And you look at the depth and the talent in the East. I mean, hell, even these teams that didn't make the playoffs in the Eastern Conference last year, like the Pistons, you know, they improved. I don't know if any team in the Eastern Conference really got worse. Like, I look at a team like the Orlando Magic, who obviously the Pistons struggled with last year, but they're going to be even better this year. I mean, they have some legitimate good players, and they're in the same kind of situation as Detroit, where they're not probably good enough to get into the playoffs yet, but they're one of those teams that is going to be better next year because they added another high lottery pick. They have a bunch of young players on the roster there's going to be internal growth with. I mean, it's going to be tough for the Pistons every single night. I mean, what teams in the East got worse outside of Indiana? And I mean, probably Charlotte as well.
Yeah.
But other than that, everyone else either improved or is probably, you know, in the same kind of tier as they were. It's not going to be easy for Detroit to just come out and win 10 more games this year. I think that 27 and a half line, I mean, hey, Vegas knows what they're doing. They know. I don't know how they know it, but they know what they're doing. So it's not easy for me to come out and say, oh, yeah, over 27 and a half, lock it in. I think they could do it, but I'm also not convinced that they do it. This is still a team that they still have some issues on this roster that they're going to have to figure out, particularly on the wings at the 3-4 spot between depth, who's going to start for them at the 4, at the 5. This team is, you know, not a perfect team, and I guess that's why their line is still only at 27 and a half. It feels like Detroit should be over that, but I'm not convinced that they're going to be with how the Eastern Conference has improved, and parity has really become a bigger story in the NBA overall.
Yeah, Aaron, I don't even think it's just the East. I think it's pretty much every team in the NBA. There's only a handful of teams this offseason that got worse. I would say for me, I think Charlotte got worse. I think you're right. Indiana got worse. I think probably who else really got worse? Utah got worse, of course.
Utah and San Antonio?
Utah and San Antonio. But, really, other than that, who got worse? I think every team probably got better. You can even look at last year's championship team, the Golden State Warriors. They have now James Wiseman coming back. They have Jonathan Kuminga. Like, they got better too. Minnesota got better. In the East, I look at it, the only teams I can even see being in the same stratosphere of badness as the Pistons are probably Washington, Orlando, Indiana, and I really struggle to say Charlotte. I still think Charlotte, even without Miles Bridges, is a superior team to Detroit. There's three, maybe four teams that I could even see the Pistons finishing ahead of in the East. And that would put them at 11. And for me, I think that is an improvement, obviously. I also think that it's difficult to say that that's going to happen because of those teams. I think most of those teams have more talent than Detroit does up and down the roster. And I think that they have more set lineups than Detroit does. I don't think we can overlook the fact that the Pistons have so many things to figure out at the beginning of this season. Like, that takes time. We saw it last year. And with the way the schedule might shake out, we don't know what the regular season schedule is yet. We will know soon. But last year, if you remember, Aaron, they got absolutely mollywopped at the beginning of the season with the schedule. They really had no chance from day one. So if you get something else like that, I mean, literally, Aaron, here was their schedule to begin last year. Chicago, Atlanta, Philly, Orlando, Brooklyn, Milwaukee, Philly, Brooklyn. Then you had Houston, Cleveland, Toronto. Like, it was brutal. They had a brutal stretch. And if you get something like that again this year, they could so easily start off with like a 3-16 record. Like, it's nobody's business. And then the season's over. Then you're just basically working towards next year. So, yeah, I think that, you know, we also can't overlook that with teams getting better, there's also a chance that they're going to overlook the Pistons. We've seen it the last couple of years. The second half of last season, the Pistons played much, much better because a lot of the good teams were resting their guys, were not taking it quite as seriously because they were going to the playoffs. And it happened the year before. We saw it so many times. So the Pistons would get smacked by these mediocre teams and would play the good teams incredibly close. So I think that there's a chance that that could help them out a little bit. Yes, there's more talent on the roster overall this year. Yes, they should be a better team. But if everyone else is better too, I don't necessarily see how you're a lock to win 5-6 more games than you did last year. You know, I also hesitate to say that they're not going to win 28 games, not going to win 27 games, because last year we overestimated. And I think that it's just human nature when you're wrong on that sense to kind of overcorrect in the other direction. So I think the schedule is going to play a really big part of this. If they can start off with an easier schedule, that's going to help them a lot. If they can just pick up a couple early wins, get a little bit of confidence while they're figuring out the rotations, while they're figuring out play styles, while they're figuring out whose role is what, I think that that will bring them a lot more in terms of being able to win games earlier on in the season, which will help them then win more games later on in the season. But yeah, I'm with you, Aaron. I think that this is a pretty perfectly placed line. I feel personally very, very hesitant to bet on either way, because frankly, I could really see them doing the same thing they did last year and hitting right on 27.
On the flip side, you know, I don't want to discredit Detroit fully. I mean, obviously, when you have a talent like Cade Cunningham, there's at least an expectation that he's kind of changing the future outlook of this team. Like, if he takes that leap and is an all-star level player,
that changes everything
here. Like, that changes the trajectory of Detroit, because not only do you have the expected leap of Cade Cunningham, who is a guy that is being ranked in the, you know, the top five or six guys to win the NBA's Most Improved Player of the Year award, which I think this is just a general thing, but I don't feel like first year guy or second year guy should really be considered for that award. I think it should, you know, be guys that have been in the league for at least a couple of years by now, but that's a whole nother topic for another day. But he's a guy that's being considered for Most Improved Player of the Year award, at least in terms of betting odds. You have other guys that are expected to take leaps. Like, a lot of people are very, very high on what Sadiq Bey can be. You have Isaiah Stewart as well. What type of impact can Jaden Ivey make as a rookie? What type of impact do a couple veterans that can come in and play minutes for you, a guy like Alec Burks, who we're going to talk about later, as well as Nerlens Noel, you know, those guys are veterans. They know what they're doing. They're going to be able to come in day one and contribute to this team. You saw, obviously, how Detroit got better with Marvin Bagley on the floor last year, having guys that can be a factor at the rim, having him for a full season. How does that improve Detroit's outlook? So I don't want to totally discredit them. Even if they didn't make a ton of moves outside of the roster from last season to get better, the potential for internal development, especially with a franchise level player like Cade Cunningham, could definitely shift this entire conversation. You know, depending how he looks at the start of next season and what type of leap he really has made. But I think that's a pretty fair line, because you're playing with a bunch of different questions. You're playing with a bunch of different scenarios. There's also the injury bug, which was a major factor for Detroit last year in terms of, costing them games and big minutes from some of their key players. So I think 27.5, Vegas knows what they're doing. That's a tough line. I can see scenarios where Detroit blows that out of the water. And I can also see a scenario where they win 25 games this year because the rest of the league got better, just like they did.
It's just a beast of division too, man. Like, Chicago's still going to be really good. Cleveland should also get better. Milwaukee's going to be at full strength. That's a beast too, man. You got to play all those teams a bunch of times. Like, that's hard. That's really hard to get through. Even if you are playing Indiana, like, Indiana's still got players, dude. They got guys on that team. They arguably have more all-star caliber players than the Pistons do as of right now, both with Tyrese Halliburton and with Miles Turner. So yeah, I think you do absolutely have to take that into account though. A leap from Cade Cunningham is going to play a huge role. And if Jaden Ivey can come in and overperform as a rookie as well, I think if you have an explosive backcourt like that, look, the way that the NBA works, it's kind of simple. Like, you win in the wings overall, but in the regular season, if you're winning games, it's going to come from your backcourt. So if that backcourt can be explosive, if Cade Cunningham can be like a 22-6-6 kind of guy, and Jaden Ivey can come in and give you 15-4-4, like, yeah, that changes things. That changes things big time for you.
Yeah, but, I mean, they were playing with Corey Joseph and Killian Hayes as their guards next to Cade Cunningham last year, and then spent half the season without Jeremy Grant. They added some guys that should be on the court most games of the season, and Alec Burks and Nerlens Noel. Like, in theory, just looking at the roster, this is a team that should be wins better compared to last year's team.
I think you're probably right. I guess for me, I look at them being more like a 25-26 win team, more so than like a 30 win team as of right now. Just because, like I said, I think that's a really hard division. I think they have a lot of questions. They do lack shooting still, and that's going to hurt. And the NBA in general is just better than it was last year, which is great as a basketball fan, but a little tough for you as a Pistons fan. But let's be clear. I don't think either of us are saying they're going to take a step back. I don't think either of us are saying they're not going to improve. I think we're both pretty in lockstep here that even if the wins don't show up maybe this year, even if they're not breaking the 30-win barrier this season, it's going to come really soon. And the improvement absolutely should be there, both from an individual player perspective in terms of Killian Hayes, Cade Cunningham, Sadiq Bey, and as a team. Because they did absolutely add better role players. They added more talent in the top of the draft and Jalen Duren and Jaden Ivey. So they are putting themselves into a position to overachieve. I have my questions about them going over 27.5 wins, but if they do, I'm not going to be surprised.
Yeah, the Pistons are an interesting story, and I think it's funny that we as the people who watch them on a nightly basis, criticize and analyze them on a nightly basis, are maybe coming off a little bit more pessimistic, even if that's not necessarily our intent here, because some of the, big dogs in the media space are actually giving Detroit a lot of credit right now in the way that they're building their team. There was a story published from ESPN the other day, really talking up Detroit, specifically the pair of guys that they drafted in this year's NBA draft, and Jaden Ivey and Jalen Duren, and really talking about the future of this team between those two, Cade Cunningham, Isaiah Stewart, and Sadiq Bey. There was just some really interesting stuff in there, provided some perspective from at least one other Eastern Conference executive. Here's a quote from the ESPN article. "I still think they might be a year away," the Eastern Conference executive said. "They're going to play hard. Dwayne Casey's teams play hard. It's just a matter of youth. It'll be a part of their growing pains, but it'll be worth it in the long term. They're going to be one of the more fun teams to watch." There was some more talk about how the Pistons came away with the two most athletic players in the draft, and that overall they're building a foundation that presents itself as a very strong core moving forward. There was another quote from J.J. Redick on his podcast, Old Man in the Three. I'll read you this quote here. Obviously, Cade, but Sadiq, Jaden Ivey looked great in summer league, and Isaiah Stewart I'm a big fan of. I think in 2 or 3 years, the Pistons will be one of the best teams in the Eastern Conference. So I think at least the general fan base around Detroit sees these types of quotes. And obviously it's going to excite you as a fan. Like you're going to like seeing national guys talking about your team in a positive light. And I don't know why that's necessarily such a big deal to fan bases, but it is. And it adds to an increase in expectations. More people are going to be expecting good things out of the Pistons this year. They're expecting Detroit to take a leap. And these types of quotes, even though they directly say it might take another year, in 2 or 3 years, they'll be one of these teams, it's going to lead to higher expectations for this upcoming season as well. And I think both of us are on the same page here that people are going to need to temper their expectations with this team.
Like Aaron, oh, sorry.
Go ahead.
No, you know what I was going to say? You know why? And this is exactly why. I'm glad you say this, because this is why I've had the attitude I have had around the Pistons, where I'm trying to kind of push back against some of these expectations, not just for the team as a whole, but for players like Sadiq Bey. I think that you look at an example, there's a perfect example, actually, this year's Tigers team. That was a team that last year started off horribly, just like the Pistons, finished well down the stretch, just like the Pistons, had some exciting young players coming into this season in Riley Green, Spencer Torkelson, just like the Pistons do. They made some good, not big time home run swing kind of offseason free agent signings and deals. They made some smart, smaller deals for players that could instantly fit into the team. So expectations started skyrocketing. And now you look at this team, they stink and everyone hates them. I hate them. I can't stand this Tigers team. I cannot stand watching them. They make me upset. And I worry that if Pistons fans especially start buying into the hype a little bit too much, if they start making those expectations a little too high, that they're going to have the same thing that Tigers fans had this year, where they're going to be so disappointed when the team doesn't perform to a playoff level or even, you know, a middle of the pack level. I think that that is a real possibility, and I don't want that to happen with this Pistons team. I want people to keep their expectations at the right level, to see that the franchise is going in the right direction, that the players, the talent are coming in, that the front office is in place, that there's a clear upward trajectory. And I love having background music for while I'm saying this, because it's just adding to the drama. No, really, like, I really think that that is something that Pistons fans have to be realistic about. Just because they don't win 35 games this year doesn't mean the season's a failure. It doesn't mean the front office stinks. It doesn't mean the players are busts. It just means that this process takes time. It takes time. And I want people to realize that and understand that before they start putting all these expectations on these young players. Because guess what? If you do, just like Tigers fans this year, who are expecting 90 wins out of an insanely flawed roster, you're going to be disappointed, you're going to be angry, and you're going to take out your anger in a way that is not productive as a fan.
Autoplay on ESPN has to be the worst, most inconvenient thing out there. That's like probably the second time in a month's worth of shows where I've had them up to, you know, read a quote from an article. And like just 15 minutes after I've had it up, it decides to play the video attached to the article.
But you know what, Aaron? It doesn't matter, because I powered through it, because I'm a professional.
Thank you. But I agree 100%.
Think about it like this, Aaron. If Tigers fans went into this season looking at the roster and saying, hey, Eduardo Rodriguez is our number one starter, that guy's a number three starter, he's not a number one starter, this team's gonna win 75-ish games. Do you think they would be as upset right now as they are? Instead of thinking that they were going to win 85 games.
I hear you. I get what you're saying. I hear 100%. I think there's obviously a tendency as a fan of a team, you're going to believe, like, it's just, it's in your heart. You want to believe this team is going to do what, you know, you want them to do. They're going to be good. They're going to make the playoffs. They're going to win more games. Like, you want to believe that. It just doesn't always work that way. And just because they don't make the playoffs or they fall short of a play-in, it doesn't mean that there wasn't improvement. It takes time. Not every team. And I think, you know, you look at the Memphis Grizzlies, the Boston Celtics of the recent years, not every team makes that type of leap. And Detroit doesn't have that same high-end level talent that those two teams did, right? And also, to be fair, like, a team like Boston had guys like Al Horford there who were helping. They had Gordon Hayward. They had Marcus Morris. Like, the Pistons have Alec Burks and Nerlens Noel. Like, nice role players, but they're not on the same caliber of those guys. And the Grizzlies, like, Ja Morant is a higher-end talent than anyone on the Pistons roster right now. Jaren Jackson, as the number two guy, is better than any of the number two guys that could be of the Detroit Pistons on their roster right now. Like, they just had more talent. Detroit's not there. Like, a lot of people, this is a conversation we've had before. A lot of people feel, you know, that 2020 draft for Detroit, Sadiq Bey, Isaiah Stewart, those guys are really part of Detroit's core. And they are right now. They are. But they're almost overrated in a sense by the people, you know, the fans. Like, Sadiq Bey is a good player, but these comparisons to how this guy's going to be an all-star, like, he's going to be Kate Cunningham's Chris Middleton. Like, we need to slow down, because him and Stewart have some very real flaws that they haven't, at least not to me, and I'm sure to you, they haven't convinced me that those are going to just go away. Like, we're 2 years in now with Sadiq Bey at 23 years old or whatever, 22, 23. And he's not a threat attacking the rim. You know, he is still an outside shooter. He's maybe shown some flashes here or there, but he's not a guy that's going to put the ball on the floor, break down the defense, get to the rim and score. He is a shooter still, right? And Isaiah Stewart, like, the shooting in summer league is nice. Let's see it in an NBA season over 82 games. Let's not see it in a seven-game stretch at the end of a losing season, and in 2-3 games of summer league, and consider his deficiencies fixed. Like, these are guys that have to take legitimate leaps to be the players that you think they can be on a winning team.
Yeah.
And that goes for Jaden Ivey too. Like, Jaden Ivey's not going to walk in day one and be ready to give you the 20 points and 6 rebounds and 6 assists a night that you may want him or expect him to be able to. It just doesn't work like that, especially for guards in the NBA. I mean, look at recent guards that get drafted in the league. Darius Garland's a great example. His first year in the league was downright abysmal. His second year, marginally improved. His big leap came in his third season at 22. It takes time for players. It's not linear improvement. You're going to see stretches in a rookie season and a second year and a third year where players look like they're taking the next step, or players look like they're taking the leap. And then they have another, and then they go right back down and they have a 5-game stretch where they're just not good. And that's what's going to happen with the Pistons overall this year. They're too young. They're too inexperienced to just go from a 23-win team to a 40-win team, to a 500 ball club competing for a play-in spot. It's just, they just didn't make enough moves to make that possible. They didn't go and add any all-stars, even with internal development. That would be incredibly difficult. Like, even Cleveland, like, they brought in Jarrett Allen. They brought in in mid-year Caris LeVert, even though that didn't really go as strong for them as they maybe would have hoped. They got the leap from Darius Garland. They added a top-tier rookie in Evan Mobley, who, just like Kate Cunningham and Scotty Barnes, had a case to be the rookie of the year. They had Kevin Love playing as a six-man of the year type level player. They had a lot of other talent. The Pistons just don't have that yet, and relying on internal growth primarily They're just not going to see that 17 win improvement to take the leap that I think some people are expecting. And some people are going to really get upset about when it doesn't happen, because it's not going to happen.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I think you and I are in agreement. We have the same kind of outlook on this team that JJ Redick does, which is they're not there yet, but they're going to get there. And everything is in place for them to succeed. Not this year, maybe not even next year, but it's going to happen. The talent is coming, and they're going to still have money for free agents next year. They're probably still going to get another top seven pick in next year's draft, which is going to put them in position to draft an all-star talent level small forward, which is something that they still, in my opinion, desperately need. I don't think Sadiq Bey is enough at the forward position. And you see that with all the contending teams. They have a lot of guys on the wings. I said it earlier in the podcast. You win in the wings, period. That's where you win championships in the NBA. So for me, I look at it. Yeah, they're not there yet. I'm going to keep my expectations realistic. I'm going to temper them for now. I'm not expecting a huge leap from all these young players right now. But absolutely, Aaron, I think we're in agreement. We are very optimistic about this team long term. It just might not happen this year. And I think fans need to be realistic about that.
Yeah, they are, in my opinion, they're at least an all-star level player away from earning that right to be considered a potential playoff caliber team.
Even if Cade's an all-star this year, I don't every team's got an all-star
right
level yeah, player on another squad
on top of
Cade. Literally everyone does. Everyone does. So I don't necessarily see why that would instantly vault them into 40 wins. I mean, shoot, look at Charlotte. Charlotte's going to be at the bottom of the standings with Detroit this year, and they have LaMelo Ball. Like, LaMelo was an all-star last year. So, yeah, even if Kate does take that leap, even if Sadiq Bey takes a small leap, even if Isaiah Stewart takes a small leap, even if Jaden Ivey overperforms, I still think breaking 30 wins is going to be a tough task for this team this year. Can it happen? Yes. Am I expecting it? No. And I think fans need to have that same kind of outlook on this season. Just because it doesn't happen this year doesn't mean it's not happening. Just because we're not optimistic about this season doesn't mean we're not optimistic about the future.
All right, let's move on now. I like the big picture conversation. Those are always really intriguing to me. Let's get into a little bit more of a niche topic, but a very important topic for this upcoming season. And that's the debate of the starting guards. You know, Cade Cunningham's going to be starting for the Pistons, but there's two guys that could be starting alongside him, I feel. And that's the number four pick in the draft, Jaden Ivey. And that's Alec Burks, who the Pistons just traded for a month ago. There are people that are going to say Alec Burks should start because he's a veteran. Look at the experience he has in the league. Look at the shooting he's going to provide for you on the floor. There are people that are going to say, you just drafted a 20-year-old with the fourth pick. He is arguably a top two, three piece in terms of building your core out for the future. Why would you not start him? It's going to be an interesting debate. I don't know what way Dwayne Casey's leaning right now. I know how I feel about the situation. Jasper, I know you've talked a little bit about Alec Burks potentially starting. I'll let you take over from here.
Yeah, absolutely. Aaron, I don't think we can have this whole conversation about how we're not super excited about the Pistons potentially breaking 30 wins this year and looking towards the future and then come out here and say, yeah, we should start Alec Burks. That doesn't really work for me. I definitely think Burks should be coming off the bench. And for reasons that I've broken down on this podcast before, I think his ability to handle the ball, I think his ability to shoot, and I think his ability to be a primary scorer on bench units is absolutely something the Pistons not only need, but like absolutely have been lacking for the last year. They had it with Derrick Rose, and those bench units were successful at times. But I think with Burks, you can spread the ball around a little bit more, and he can actually shoot and play off ball in a way that Derrick Rose really couldn't. So I look at this backup unit. I think about something like Killian Hayes, Alec Burks, and then you have Marvin Bagley in the front court. You can figure out your other two starters, you know, either which way you want to. Maybe it's Isaiah Livers. Maybe it's, you know, maybe they do something like Kelly Olynyk out there with Bagley as well, because Kelly Olynyk can shoot. There's a lot of different things that they could do from that perspective. But I think having those three guys on your second unit makes a lot of sense, because it gives you a shooting threat with Alec Burks, which Killian Hayes and Marvin Bagley have not proven to be so throughout their career so far. I think it also gives you the ability to take a little bit of pressure off of Killian Hayes. And I think it also gives you the ability to stagger your lineups a little bit better. As for Jaden Ivey, if we're talking about from a starting perspective, absolutely. Look, if you don't think this is like a playoff or even play-in contending team, I don't really see why you wouldn't give the duo of Ivey and Kate Cunningham as much time during this regular season to figure it out between the two of them, to gel, to create that partnership. I just, for me, if that's your long-term goal, why not start now? You're not in a position to contend. So why even bother with putting somebody like Alec Burks out there in the starting lineup, who's going to take the ball away from Cade Cunningham, who's going to take the ball away from Isaiah Stewart, from whoever else is in that starting lineup? I think for me, it's very obviously, in my opinion, should be Burks on the bench. It just makes sense, both from a roster perspective in the short term and a roster perspective in the long term. Your lineups are better that way, in my opinion. So for me, that's how I feel. Aaron, I'm interested to see how you think about this. I'm assuming you're kind of in the same boat I am, but I don't know.
Look, to be frank, it would be asinine if Jaden Ivey isn't starting day one. This is not a team that's going to be a playoff team this year. We just spent 25 minutes talking about it. In no realm should they be setting aside immediately developing their backcourt of the future to play 30-year-old Alec Burks in your starting lineup. There's just not a world where that makes sense. You have a dynamic between Cunningham and Ivy that should benefit your team day one, even with Ivy being a rookie, even with him going to have to go through the growing pains of being a rookie guard in the NBA. That style of play that contradicts Cunningham but will work to Detroit's benefit is so important. Having a guy like Cunningham, who's the methodical ball handler, doesn't beat the defense with his speed or athleticism, but lulls them to sleep, makes tough shots over defenders, needles a pass to the open cutter, finds the open big on a lob off a pick and roll, and then having Jaden Ivey, who's going to just out-athletic the other guards defender between his speed, his ability to jump at the rim, his ability to take contact and score through it, score against it, just beating guys to the ball, beating guys to the rim, beating guys down the floor. That dynamic is going to be so important for the Pistons next year and for the next however many years that those two guys share the backcourt together. And that's not to take away from Alec Burks, because I really liked that trade for Detroit with New York because of Alec Burks. Like, Nerlens Noel is going to play minutes for Detroit, and that's fine. Like, he's going to do some nice things. I think Detroit's going to benefit from having an able-bodied veteran big in the rotation. But Alec Burks was the real get of that trade. A guy that's a 38% career three-point shooter, was a almost 42% three-point shooter couple years ago, over 40% again last year. You're talking about a guy that really brings what this team is still lacking in terms of shooting and scoring, but he brings some of that, and he can help quell some of those issues for Detroit. But it's going to be off the bench, and he's a guy that, hey, look, if Ivy or Cunningham or Sadiq Bey has to miss a game or has to miss some games, like, yeah, Alec Burks should be that first guy that could step in for them and fill that role in the starting lineup, because he's going to provide, he's going to score and bring value to Detroit, but it shouldn't be at the expense of the 20-year-old rookie who has been talked about and hyped up as the guy next to Cade Cunningham, as that backcourt of the future, that people are talking about as potentially being, you know, the next great backcourt. Well, for years it was, you know, Damian Lillard, CJ McCollum, John Wall, Bradley Beal. The Pistons have a duo that can be like that in 2-3 seasons. And it wouldn't make any sense to bring Jaden Ivey off the bench, especially because I feel like the fit alongside Killian Hayes is certainly a bit more difficult to comprehend and to hash out. I feel like it'd be easier for both Ivey and Burks and Hayes. Like, I feel like there's just benefits to pairing Cunningham with Ivey and Hayes with Burks. Burks provides shooting alongside Killian Hayes, another ball handler. Not that Ivey obviously can't handle the basketball as well, but he's not as much of a shooter. He's not going to have as much of that pull and the gravity of the defense that a guy like Burks can bring to the table. And for Cunningham, as I already said, having that guy that contradicts your slower style of pace, that can just burst down the court and gives Detroit another element in transition, just gives them another element to their offense. It was a team that, yes, they lacked a lot of shooting last year, but they lacked a whole lot of athleticism as well. Ivy certainly changes that. And it would just be insane to me that for a team destined to be a lottery team, destined to be a top or a bottom, you know, 8 team in the league, for them to not start the number 5 pick in the draft and for them to not start this 20-year-old that's supposed to be their future alongside Cade Cunningham for 30-year-old Alec Burks would just be crazy to me. And that's not even a slight at Alec Burks at all, because I am genuinely excited to see him on the court with the Pistons, because it brings back some of that ability that they had, like you said, with Derrick Rose as a guard that could just shoot a little bit, put the ball on the floor a little bit, score, just overall be a bolster to a team. And I think Alec Burks bring that. So I'm excited about that, but in no world do I think that he should be getting the nod over Jaden Ivey because of being a veteran and all that. Like, the Pistons are going to be bad. They need to get the young guys on the court together. They need to let them gel, gain experience, build chemistry. And yeah, it would just be utterly crazy if Burks is starting over Ivey on opening night.
Aaron, the only way Alec Burks makes sense as your starter is if you've never watched Alec Burks play and you've only looked at his basketball reference page. Because, like, if you watched Alec Burks play, you will know that he makes no sense in a starting backcourt next to Kate Cunningham. He makes no sense there. The guy is, and look, I'm with you too. I think he could really help this team in a lot of ways, but, like, he's a ball hog. That is not, like, a new criticism of Alec Burks. Alec Burks likes to have the ball in his hands, and that's another reason why I kind of compared him to Derrick Rose, where Derrick Rose is a starter. If you had, like, somebody like Kate Cunningham next to him, would make zero sense, because that's a guy who likes to have the ball in his hands a lot. And Alec Burks is the same way, but Burks is not an explosive athlete. He's very methodical. He uses his ball handling. He uses his understanding of angles. He's great attacking on the baseline. He does a lot of really good things, but those are things that don't make any sense next to Kate Cunningham in the starting lineup. They don't make sense as, like, you. This is not a guy you want to be having. He's a higher usage player. You don't need that in your starting lineup with Sadiq Bey and Cade Cunningham. You just don't. But on the bench, he makes perfect sense. You need a guy who can come in and give you that veteran stability. You need a guy who can come in and calm down the offense. You need a guy who can come in and give you a bucket when your whole backcourt is struggling, especially when you have somebody like Killian Hayes who still needs to prove he can do it. So, Aaron, I might sound crazy. Maybe this is a hot take. I'm not even joking when I say Corey Joseph makes more sense as a starter next to Kate Cunningham this year than Alec Burks does. I'm not even joking, because I know Corey Joseph will, you know, buzz off every now and then and stand in the corner. Alec Burks is going to demand the ball in his hands. So, yeah, for me, I'm with you. It's nonsense to think that anybody other than Jaden Ivey should be starting in the backcourt next to Kate Cunningham this year. I'm sorry, and I hate to use this phrase because it's used by people who don't know what they're talking about a lot, but if you watch the games, you'll know that's not a good pairing. Alec Burks and Kate Cunningham is not a good pairing in that backcourt.
If we're watching Kate Cunningham and Corey Joseph starting games together for the Detroit Pistons this upcoming season, I'm going to be checking out
very, very, very early in the year. So don't.
Yeah. Wait, before everybody comments angrily, I don't want Corey Joseph to start. Let me make that very clear. I would prefer not to watch Corey Joseph at all this year, if possible.
Congrats on all the death wishes you're about to get, by the way.
I know. But really though, if I'm really trying to like make the best lineups possible, I genuinely do feel like Corey Joseph would make more sense than Alec Burks next to Cade Cunningham. If the rest of your starting lineup is going to be, you know, Sadiq Bey, you know, one of Marvin Bagley or Isaiah Livers and Isaiah Stewart, there's just too many mouths to feed otherwise. So it doesn't make sense for me. It really doesn't. And I don't know where this idea that Alec Burks could or should be the starter is coming from, because he's frankly never really been very successful in that role at any point in his career. He's always been successful coming off of the bench as that primary scorer for the second unit.
And believe it or not, actually last year, Alec Burks started the most games he ever has in his entire career, 44 games. He started 44 games last year.
And the Knicks stunk.
Yeah. And the Knicks
sucked.
So that should tell you everything you need to know. Just so you know, over his career, Alec Burks has played 625 games. He's only started 135 of those. So it's
ask Knicks fans about Alec Burks passing. Really, go do that. Like, come on, man. I swear to God, sometimes I don't want to watch the Knicks either, but I have to sometimes. And I'm just saying, you watch like two games of Alec Burks, even when he's with the Jazz. It's like, that's not what you need at all. That's not what this team needs in the starting lineup. And it's 100% what they need for their bench unit. So it's nonsensical, in my opinion, to argue otherwise.
One last thing I wanted to mention on the show this week. Actually, earlier today, I started yesterday, finished it today. I was listening to the latest Woj pod with Steve Clifford, head coach of the Charlotte Hornets for what feels like the 15th time.
Guess who's Bazak back on the block? Anyway.
But he made a point that I couldn't agree with more, talking about Summer League. And he was talking about how when he took the job and when he was first getting settled in, because he got hired only, you know, a little bit before Summer League started, he was talking with Mitch Kupchak, the GM of Charlotte, and they were talking about Summer League and bringing their guys down. And, you know, they both agreed, like, if we're going to go down and we're going to spend all this time, we're going to bring all these players, we're not going to play them two games. Like, we're going to play our guys five games. These guys on our roster and in our G League program that, you know, we want to see what they can do. We want to determine where they're at in terms of their development, where they're at in terms of, you know, their offseason workout regime. What, you know, did we give them to work on and how are they improving in it? You know, some of these guys, you know, on Charlotte's roster, for example, JT Thor, Kai Jones, James Bouknight didn't play because he was injured, but, you know, that's another guy that's in that same conversation. But the point I'm trying to make is I couldn't agree more with that idea of, look, we're going to Summer League. These guys are getting an opportunity to play 5-on-5 against legitimate equal competition with referees, professional referees in the building. Let's make the most out of this. Let's use these resources to our advantage. You know, we're a young team. We have guys on our roster that we need to develop, that need to take leaps if they're going to be players for us, for our franchise down the line, as we try to build out our roster to playoff contenders. And I just couldn't agree with that more. And I think Summer League, you know, not to get on a big rant here, but I think Summer League has gotten away from what it should be. This is a perfect opportunity to play your young guys, get them reps early on in a competitive setting, like Steve Clifford said, against competition that they're going to see down the line, against competition that is equal to where they're at in terms of their own development right now, with referees in a game that is going to be organized and competitive. And I absolutely hate, as one of the biggest Summer League enthusiasts on the planet, that it has turned into playing these guys, playing these prospects, playing these first-year, second-year players, one, two games, and then pulling them out. What in the world is the point of that? You know, so props to the Knicks for playing Quentin Grimes every game and Jericho Sims and Miles McBride. Props to the Thunder for doing it right. I mean, Josh Giddey played in both the Salt Lake City Summer League, and so did Chet Holmgren, and they played games in Vegas. Now, I think Giddey played a combined
four or five games. Holmgren played four or five games. You know, they didn't play every game. I think OKC played six or seven games, but they still got a ton of action. And look at what we saw from OKC because of that. Like, we got to see where these guys are. We got to see Josh Giddey, who had his rookie season ended early because of injuries. We got to see what he can do with some of these guys that he's going to be playing big minutes with. I mean, they sent their whole, essentially their whole roster there. And these teams that are using Summer League correctly, congratulations. One thing I want to say relating this to the Pistons before I wrap this up, because I doubt anyone really cares about this conversation at the end of the day, but there was this talk about how the Pistons only wanted to play, you know, Killian Hayes. The plan was to only play in one game to give reps to Jaden Ivey and Saben Lee and these other guards. And that's fine. But once Jaden Ivey got hurt, once Saben Lee got hurt, why was Killian Hayes not on that court? Like, he's not, like, what has he done in his career that's determined, hey, we know this guy is ready to contribute for us as we grow as a franchise? Like, this is a guy that still has way too many flaws in his game. And not just to single him out, and not just to single out the Pistons, because it's something that the majority of the teams at Summer League did, was they held out these guys that really could be benefiting from these minutes, giving them directives, giving them, you know, situations that you want to see them play in. And I'm just disappointed that more teams don't value Summer League the way Steve Clifford and Mitch Kupchak talked about. I thought that was a really interesting conversation on the Woj Pod, that it was probably like the least important thing that they talked about in retrospect. Just thought that was really, really interesting. And hell, look at what Quentin Grimes has done for himself. Like, people are talking about him as the cream of the crop of the Donovan Mitchell trade for Utah, if they can get him. And that's, you know, they're talking about wanting him over guys like Emmanuel Quickly, Obi Toppin, Cam Reddish. Like, now all of a sudden, Quentin Grimes goes out and has the, you know, a great summer league, and everyone's talking about him, and he's making a name for himself. He's making a case for himself to be in the Knicks rotation, or to be a piece in that trade, the big player piece in that trade for Donovan Mitchell, if the Knicks pull off the deal, which it sounds like they're going to. So, very long rant, very stupid rant, but I think it's important.
Well, Aaron, I'm going to play devil's advocate here, because you're right. I don't think anyone cares that much, or certainly not as much as you do. But really, here's how I see it being the difference. I look at a team like you said, like Charlotte, like the Knicks, even OKC to a lesser extent. These are teams that, all right, I'm going to leave OKC out of this conversation just for this second. But I look at like Charlotte, I look at the Knicks. These are teams that are trying to compete for the playoffs, and they really need to see which of their young guys deserve to be in that rotation right off the bat, because they don't have very much room for error here. They're on the lower end of the talent in terms of the Eastern Conference. So you brought up a great point with the Quentin Grimes thing too. New York's trying to make a trade for Donovan Mitchell. It behooves them to make Quentin Grimes look as good as possible. Even with OKC, they have so many young pieces. They have so many players that are of kind of similar talent levels that are unknowns, that they really need to figure out exactly what they have. That's not true of Holmgren and Giddey. Those guys are going to get their playing time. So maybe that's not a great example. But with the Pistons, there's not really any question marks that are going to be answered in Summer League. I don't see any of these lineups, any of these rotations changing because Killian Hayes played really well in four Summer League games. The Pistons are kind of set. Killian Hayes is going to get playing time. Isaiah Stewart is going to get a chance to shoot threes. You know, even Saben Lee, he got hurt, so that's why he played a little bit more, because they don't really know still what they have in Saben Lee. They don't really know what they should do with him. That's at least how I look at it. For the Pistons, why play Killian Hayes four games and maybe get him hurt? Why play Isaiah Stewart four games and maybe get him hurt? You're already going to play those guys for a set amount of time this year. They're already going to have very clear roles on this team, regardless of how they play in Summer League. Killian Hayes isn't going to play himself into a starting position off of Summer League. It's just not going to happen. And he's also not going to play himself off the roster because of Summer League. It's just not going to happen. So I think when I look at it for the Pistons versus those other teams, those teams have young players they need to showcase. They have young players that they need to see whether they're going to slot into their rotation or not, if they're ready to win games or not. The Pistons don't have that. So I think for me, that's where I look at it with Summer League, where I can excuse it for the Pistons. Although, like you said, though, Oklahoma City, you know, they're kind of an example of a team that's in a similar position and didn't decide to rest all their young guys. So I understand where you're coming from. I am kind of playing devil's advocate here, but I do think that individual team situations kind of dictate how those young players are going to play and how much they're going to play in Summer League.
Yeah, and that's not my intent either. Like, my intent is not, oh, Killian Hayes needs to play in Summer League to determine if he's a starting level player or not. Like, that's not my intent. But it's a good checkpoint for these teams, especially that missed the playoffs. You know, Detroit's, what, halfway into their offseason? Like, it's a good place to kind of check where you're at in terms of where you left from last year to where you're at now, halfway through your offseason against competition that you're going to be seeing then in a couple months. And we're talking about a week and a half, 2 weeks worth of games. Like, we're not talking about a month long, a month and a half long, you know, schedule. Like, this is a week and a half of basketball for,
I guess. But Aaron, what if, like, Jaden Ivey, instead of twisting his ankle, sprained his ACL? You know what I mean? Like, I don't think that the Pistons are in a position where they can be taking those kind of risks.
That in a workout. If you're going to go around not playing guys because there's a potential that they're going to get hurt, then you might as well put them in ice until the regular season. And then you
That's what the Pistons did ultimately.
Yeah. And I think that's silly. I think it's silly to be, if you're worried about guys getting hurt, then they better not be working out in the offseason, because you can get hurt.
That's not the same. I mean,
what about a game guys playing in and, you know, at Chris Brickley's gym, you know, like, there's a chance that they can get hurt there too. They're playing 5-on-5 there too. I think going around like that, I just think that's a bad mindset to have. Like, I think it's a scared mindset, to be honest. Like, if you're not willing to play guys, I don't know. It's not, again, it's not that big of a deal. Obviously, NBA teams don't fully, at least not all of them, care about this at the same level as other franchises do. Definitely going off topic to end the show. Didn't necessarily feel like it was going to go off on a rant like that, but once I started talking, I knew I wasn't going to stop. Jasper, I think we should wrap up before we really turn off the listeners. Anything else you wanted to add before we go here?
Forget it, Aaron. It's Summer League.
Exactly. It's on, and it's over and done with. And the Pistons didn't win, so I'm down another 15 grand, right?
Those Believe paychecks just going straight to MGM. Lucky them. Or sorry, straight to Bet Online. Straight to Bet Online. Thank you.
That's a strike. That's a strike against us. Great. All right, guys. I think that's where we're gonna wrap up this week's show.
Don't worry, Aaron. They all turned it off about 5 minutes ago. We're fine. We're safe.
Well, all right, everyone. Thanks for listening this week. Shout out to Believe and our sponsors, Bet Online. We thank everyone for listening. We'll see you next time. You're on the Palace of Pistons podcast.
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.